Last week we read on the 12th chapter, verse 1 through 7. This week we're going to read from verse 8, in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 8, to the end of the chapter.
You shall not at all do as we are doing here today, every man doing whatever is right in his own eyes. For as yet you have not come to the rest and the inheritance which the Lord your God is giving you. But when you cross over the Jordan and dwell in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to inherit, and he gives you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then there will be the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. There you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, and all your choice offerings which you vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who is within your gates, since he has no portion nor inheritance with you. Take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place that you see, but in the place which the Lord chooses, in one of your tribes. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within your gates, whatever your heart desires, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it, of the gazelle and the deer alike. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it out on the earth like water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain, or your new wine, or your oil, of the firstborn of your herd, or your flock, of any of your offsprings which you vow, of your freewill offerings, or of the heave offering of your hand. But you must eat them before the Lord your God in the place which the Lord your God chooses, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite who is within your gates. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all to which you put your hands. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in your land. When the Lord your God enlarges your border as he has promised you, and you say, "Let me eat meat," because you long to eat meat, you may eat as much meat as your heart desires. If the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, then you may slaughter from your herd and from your flock which the Lord has given you, just as I have commanded you, and you may eat within your gates as much as your heart desires. Just as the gazelle and the deer are eaten, so you may eat them. The unclean and the clean alike may eat them. Only be sure that you do not eat the blood, for the blood is the life. You may not eat the life within the meat. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out on the earth like water. You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and your children after you, when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. Only the holy things which you have, and your vowed offerings, you shall take and go to the place which the Lord chooses. And you shall offer your burnt offerings, the meat and the blood, on the altar of the Lord your God, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out on the altar of the Lord your God, and you shall eat the meat. Observe and obey all these words which I command you, that it may go well with you and your children after you forever, when you do what is good and right in the sight of the Lord your God. When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, "How did these nations serve their gods? I also will do likewise." You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods, for they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it, nor take away from it.
Do you remember what the first few verses had to say? last week when we went through it. What was the one number one thing that I was trying to express and explain to you? The place. Destroy the place first. All of the places where there is any kind of idol worship or any kind. When they went in the land, they destroyed the place where they worshiped first. Then they would destroy what? The idols and everything else. Now, that's an interesting terminology because the word for place is hamakom. And it's the very same word that, you know, when Abraham saw the hamakom, saw where he was to sacrifice his son. At a certain place. Now here in Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter, and we're in the 11th verse, probably go back a little bit, but here he says, thou shalt be a place. Now, after you have done the destruction and destroying the places where everything of the false gods were, or the pagan gods were, or the Baalim were at, about Baals were, then you come and you get rid of that. Then he said, by the way, you will establish a place. Who gets to choose the place? Yeah, Elohim gets to choose the place. Yahuwah gets to choose the place. And he didn't pick it right away, did he? Well, it took a while, all the way until David's time. And basically, it wasn't even done in David's time per se. Daniel will be going into the First Kings, and it's going to be done under King Solomon. And that will be the place where he's going to place his name. So a lot of things had to happen. But before we get there, I want to ask you some questions. In verse 8, I've got Old English here. Ye shall not do all the things that we, including Moses, do here this day. Every man that is right. Now the word right here in Hebrew means that which is upright, that which is correct, and that which is straight. Now that tells us something. What does it tell you? He says you're not going to do, we are not going to do what was right, what was straight, what was, what's the other word I said? Upright. How from now on? So let me ask you a question. What happened during the 40 years? What did they do? Now remember, what is right? What is upright? What is decent? What is correct? Now he says, you're not going to do that anymore. That's what Moses said. Oh, God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Did he change something in the book of Deuteronomy? Well, why is he saying this for?
He says what's right in his own eyes.
Correct.
That's a lot
but it
more than
Moses
just
himself.
Right.
Yeah,
but
himself.
Everybody has opinions of what is right.
What's going to change? You know, there's a change taking place here in Deuteronomy, and he's telling them, when you go into this land, you will not do as we have been doing. That which is right, and how we see it, and a correction, as how we would consider it being right. Now he's changing the pattern. Why is he making this statement for Ellie?
It has to be some type of a change of policy.
Has
not
what?
A change of a right or wrong before God, but there has to be a change happening. Because if the people on this side thought it was wrong to murder people, it's still wrong to murder people.
Correct.
If the people over here thought it was wrong to steal, it's still wrong to steal. So it's got to be a change in actions, not a change in what is right and wrong.
It's a change from what man thinks is right and wrong to what God says.
But have they been wrong
40
years under man's rule?
Yes. Yeah.
So why
they got
the commandment 40 years ago?
Yeah, they didn't obey.
Wait. I mean, all your statements, correct. However, there's something missing in this picture.
Wasn't he starting to establish a specific place of worship for them?
No. Not Moses.
No,
yeah, but it didn't happen until David's time. Many hundred years later. Literally hundreds of years later. Maybe perhaps 1,000. Not quite that long. Yes.
Does it have anything to do with the worship on high places the wrong way?
Okay. The first part of the chapter talks about destroying those things. Okay? And that's what they're commanded to do. Remember, the book of Deuteronomy has two main subject matters throughout its entire chapter, entire book. What are those two things? Statutes and judgments. Now, in the 40 years, when they were wandering, as we call it, but remember, they went nowhere until what took place? The cloud moved them. They weren't wandering in stupidity. They weren't wandering in ignorance. They weren't wandering in knowing where to go. They were going exactly where the cloud came and stopped. We went through all those places many times, didn't we? And God said, I took you through, read the first part of this chapter, I made you hungry. I starved you. I made you thirsty. I took away everything from you. Why? To what? To test them. Test them for what?
See what was in their hearts.
To show them who he was.
So what?
To show them who he was and who he would be to them. He said he was their healer.
Where are they going to go? So what?
They're each tribe's going into its own land. They're dividing up, and all of the tribes have their own territory and their own land.
Who owns the land?
God.
Okay, now you're entering into something. Now, as you're entering into something, this is the second generation, remember? The second generation wasn't complaining about going back to Egypt. They weren't complaining about all that. What'd they do? They're ready to go. They already conquered two major kings and took over the land, didn't they? Remember that? They already conquered it. Took them over. The book of Numbers. They're already victorious. They're looking forward to going into the promised land. Now, we also know that something else did not happen in those 40 years. What was required by law, but they didn't do it because God said not to. Circumcision. Now, keep these things really keen in mind. They could not keep the Passover according to what is written in the book of Leviticus, because they, why? There was no barley. There was no land. There was no fruit. There's nothing to harvest. For 40 years, God moved them all over the place to 40 different locations. So now we're at this point. And now they're entering in. Now he says, you're going to do something different from now on. So what are they going to do differently? Are the statutes now eliminated? Oh no, he's very strong on that. First part of the chapter says, statutes and judgments that you will keep. The very last part of this chapter says, you will not do anything with it. You will not change the statute to add, subtract, or diminish nothing from it. Right? So statutes and judgments are still there. What is changing?
Well, if we're just going to stick with chapter 12, it seems like the context is specifically about how they're going to do their sacrifices and worship before God. I mean, it doesn't look like he's talking about general overall life. For this chapter, he seems to be zoning in on the sacrifices, how they're supposed to be performed, where they're supposed to be performed.
Verse 9. The key word there. You have not come to the place of rest and to inherit with Yahweh. You have not come yet. They haven't gone in yet. Oh, so now when they go in and we realize what's written in the book of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, all those commandments, all those statutes had to do with the harvest, the three harvests, three seasons of the year, now it's going to begin. 40 years of testing them out. What, testing them out whether they are bad or good? Ask yourself a personal question. Don't answer it out loud. Have you ever had to go through a test to find out if you can do it before you actually went in and did the assignment. Many of you have gone through school and colleges and all that kind of stuff, and you got a nice little degree on your name, whatever it is. All you're doing is learning. All you're doing is being tested out. Do you understand this? Yes or no? Oh, no, I don't. Okay, let's go back to school. We have to go back to school, get educated. And once you get all that testing done, you know, the professor, the teacher, marking the grades, A, 100%, whatever it was. Now, when you graduate, what's happening to you? Your testing has been completed. Now, you have to put it into practice. After 40 years of being tested, finding out where is the A, where's the B, and the C, the D, and the F, and you look at the F, gotta correct that F, get up there, you know. It takes many years, by the way, for you to find and pull out of this lump sum of, well, I'm a loser. And God says, no, you're not. Just, I'm keeping you tested till you begin to understand what I want you to do. So God's a little more patient in relationship to giving us direction. The place of rest. In the book, I think it's Hebrews, there was a play on words. That word for rest, by the way, is the same word that, you know, Noah, you know who he is? It's the man's name. And Noah means the rest, the place where he's going to become a rest. From what? Rest from what? During Noah's time, what did they have to rest from? What took place? Devastation. Total devastation, the loss of all life. Except that was there in the ark. And then the ark found a place of Noah, a place to rest. And inside this ark was Noah, the rest. It's a play of words to understand this. Now in the book of Hebrews, it talks about that Joshua, he entered the people into the land of what? Rest, but it's a different word. It means word for Shabbat. And that means a resting place. Shabbat's a little different word, meaning it comes from the word of a place that's safe, a safety place. This is not that kind of place. This is just a place to sit and be rested out, relaxed. When thou shalt keep the Sabbath, do not do any work, and you will rest. It means you will noach on the Sabbath. Now, so we're coming here, and he said, now, when you go over Jordan, what are you going to do? And he says, and Elohim will give you to inherit, and he will give you Noah from all your enemies. How long did that take? A couple of days? Hey, it was still happening during the time of David. Long, long process of the place where it would be a place where all the enemy is no longer going to bother you. You'll be safe. No? Does God think faster than we do? More like, I think it was Peter, said, human beings look at God as though he's delaying his time. He takes too long to do something. Not to God. It's a real short period of time. Very short period of time. So from the time of they actually got rest under Solomon, now they're in a place of rest. Hundreds of years later. We don't look at it from that point of view, do we? Remember I told you over and over again, I'll tell you again, what the Torah is all about is telling you how God thinks, not how people think. Tell you how God acts, not how people act. Tell you what God does, not what people do. Every time they did something wrong, God said, I put you to the test, and guess what? You failed there, so let's do it again. Oh, fail again, let's do it again. and do it again. And some of them didn't want to pass the test, did they? And so he says, okay, since you don't want to pass the test, you're not going. You got an F. With a God world means you're dead. You don't go in the place of safety. You don't go place of promise. You don't get to go there. Now, he's telling these people, as they go into, ready to go into this thing, he's warned them an awful lot. Now, be hesitant, be careful, take heed, listen to what I'm telling you, because I'm not going to be there. And you must do something. Keep the things going as you have been taught already. You've been tested already. You've been proven out now. And God says, because you have proven yourself, I will take you in there. Right? They're not going in there because they didn't pass the test. It says there in Deuteronomy, right? Fourth chapter. I did this to test you out. Now you're going to go in. So now when they go in, he said, now what are we going to do there? Verse 11. There shall be a place. Oh. That Elohim will choose to cause his name to dwell there. And there I command you, you will give your chullah offerings. I mean, they didn't do it before? Did they have an altar everywhere they went through the 40 years of wilderness? How many altars did Moses build? Where? At the Mount Sinai. Right? The next altar was built during Joshua's time in the Promised Land. Remember that? All right. So now he says, and your zibach, that means your sacrifices, and your tithes are the, that's the, we'll talk about tithe or from the tenth a little later on. And what's called a heave offering, we'll talk about that. And your hand, of your hand, and a choice, very fascinating word, vows. Now, there could be a place. Let me ask you a question. You've heard me speak before. Now's your test. What is the word for vow here? It's not an oath. It's a vow. Two different things now. What was a vow? When you have these vows, you're going to take them to a place. Right? Okay. It's what? What'd you say? Okay. It has, we'll get to that more in detail later. It associates with a word called raising something up. Raising something up. Now, what does that terminology mean in Hebrew? Karon? Every time you approach God, you are karboning. That's a horrible translation of both Hebrew and English ing form. But you understand what I'm saying? You're going to give something to God. That's what this is all about. What does it say here? On the raising of your hands, you're going to have a, you're going to bring something to Him. All right? You're going to kabon. You're going to go there. And the word for vow means almost the same thing, but no, it doesn't. It means you have committed yourself to make a promise to God. If this, I promise to do this, and I will take it to you. Because it belongs to you. Not to, you can promise your kids something, doesn't apply. That's not a vow. You promise something in, let's see, your creditor, yeah, that's just, that's not a vow. Not biblically speaking. And this word here, and everywhere you find it. Now, can you people give me an example of someone who made a vow based upon a condition? Certain things, if I do certain things, that God will return me and give me something in exchange out of His hand. Samson.
Vow or promise to God? Or,
let's not go that forward. Let's go backwards. The most famous man we all know about? Jacob. Jacob made a promise. He made a vow. He made a vow before God. You return me back to this place, I will then therefore do something in exchange. And what do? He had a tithe. After 20 years later, 20 years later, he comes up with the tithe. So that's what a vow is. But the word before that is a very interesting word. And you're most likely to say choice. Now we have to ask ourselves, a vow, he says a choice one. One that is different than any other vow. One that's been selected. It's the best of the best. So when you present something to God, and God's very strong on that one, don't present to me anything that is lame. Don't present to me anything that has got a scar on it. That's impure. Now, when you present something to God with your vow, you're vowing something to Him differently. It's not saying, I vow to obey your commandment. No, that's not it. The vow is, I'm going to bring something to you on that place where you have placed your name. Now, these people entering Israel is entering into a land they'd never been in before. Well, that family, generation did not. And so, lo and behold, he now says, now you're going to be doing something different when you get in there. And the first thing he tells you about is this, a place that you're going to be having, which God's going to choose. He's going to put his name there so you know where it's at. You're going to have a whole offering, and you're going to have a zivach offering, and you're going to have your me'ach, ma'aser, that's word for tithes, and you're going to have your heave offering and your choice vows. That's what you're going to do at that place. Keep that apart in mind. Just as much as we learned last week, that the first thing that Moses told them, that God said, I want you to destroy the places. And if you destroy the places, something's going to happen. There's no place for you to go to worship those other gods or be part of their world or be joined with them. Now, there's nothing in the Torah or Old Testament, that's the truth, that a vow is a religious thing. That is, it's a requirement by law. Thou shalt give a vow every year. Doesn't say that. It's all volunteer. If you do it willingly, that's what you're pouring. And he tells them now, when you go in this promised land, there's something else you're going to have to do. Verse 12. Did you notice how different that is? Remember he said, that we have done this day, we are not going to do it anymore. Or you're not going to do it anymore. You're going to do something different. And what you're going to do different is, you're going to take your sons, and you're going to take your daughters, you're going to take your men servants, you take your maid servants, you're going to take a Levi, and you will gather together, and there will be no part for, they have no part for you, and you will take all your whole offerings, take all that with you to the place. That's the subject matter, the place. So I've heard someone say, because it's a false teaching, that if you can't afford, a family can't afford to go to the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Shavuot or whatever you want to call it, or any feast that goes too far for you, all that's required by law is the male. No, the Word of God doesn't say that. It says everybody. Everybody goes. It's not accepting the rule. Everybody goes. Well, he could keep on going now here. You're good. He says, but, verse 14, the place which Yahuwah has chosen. That's where you have your whole offerings. Oh, that's interesting. And notwithstanding, you may zibach and eat the flesh in your gates, according to the blessing that you, Yahuwah, La Elohim, has given you. We'll get into the clean and unclean here in a minute. Now, there is a stipulation here in verse 17. What is the stipulation? Okay. What is it? You may not eat in thy gates the tithe of the corn, the tithe of the wine, the tithe of the oil, or the firstborn, the firstlings of thy herd, or the tithe of thy flock. You remember what the tithe of the flock is? Which one is it? The first one? No, the tenth one. Does that only apply to cattle? Now, I heard a word of Omar, right? I said, weight, the measurement, how much stuff is, how heavy it is. Now, we know the Passover time. There is the first one that must be offered to God and waved before Him. We know that. What do you do with the rest of the grain? Well, when you buy, let's put it this way, best way I can put it, okay? Let's say you're a farmer. I don't know you are, but says you're a farmer. Okay. And lo and behold, you've got all this wheat you got to harvest in. So harvest it all in, you know, big, huge container. How do you divide it out? How do you measure it? You measure by how? A bushel, yeah. And so let's say you have 300 bushels. You take the first one of 300, or you go 1, 2, 3, 4, there's the 10th one, poop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 10th one, poof. It's the 10th one you pull out. That's the 10th one. Not the first one. It's the 10th one. The law still remains the same for both. If there is no increase, what do? There is nothing there. Why would God do that to you? Why would God do the 8th of Israel for? Why would He test them out that way for? Why would God sometimes say, I am not going to bless you this year, and bless you year after year after year after year, and following year, there's no income. There's no bushels. There's no wheat. There's hardly anything to keep a family alive. What do I do? Why would God test you out? Because you did something wrong? Why did He test you out for? You remember what Jeff said some time ago now, about the Hebrew word for poor? It is one who is humbled. So sometimes the greatest blessing that God can give you is take away your wealth to bring forth humility and humble yourself before the great God. Because poverty in Hebrew does not mean have no money. It means you are going to be so dependent upon God, you will humble yourself before the Creator of heaven and earth to supply you for it. Now, we haven't gone into 7 years of harvest yet, anyway. And then 1 year you have no harvest, so on and so forth. So God puts people to test. Have you ever been tested by God with nothing?
Is that what it means to be poor in spirit, what you were just
saying? That's exactly the same phrase. Exact same phrase. Jeff brought that out in his talk some time ago. I can't remember when it was. But it means the same thing, not quite the same thing in Greek. But in order to explain it best way, he wasn't thinking about being, you don't have much spirit. No. You're a humble person. Rather than arrogant in spirit, you're humble in spirit. But the broken and contrite spirit is what God's looking for, right? Does He only look for it once? Once you've got it? And once you get, see, I'm broken. And then He blesses you. Does that mean you have no longer had to be a humble person? No. The reason why you got His blessing is because you are humble. And sometimes, in order to bring someone down that He loves, what does He do? He chastises us. Why? To bring us down. Keep that in mind. Bring us down. As we continue on. By the way, a heave offering. tell you what it means. You can write this down. It's Exodus 25, verse 2, starting in verse 2. He says, speak unto the children of Israel, and when they bring unto me, and it says offering in some of your translations, it really means the heave offering. Not just a zibach offering. It's a heave offering. Well, it should be done in Hebrew. Of every man that gives it willingly, with his heart, ye shall take my heave offering. And this heave offering, which you shall take of them, a bunch of junk. Gold, silver, brass, blue, purple, and scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skin, dyed red skin, fine leather, acacia wood. Why? Oil, spices, sweet incense, the onyx stone, and for the breastplate. Why? And verse 8, and let them make me a sanctuary. So when you bring forth a heave offering, it's yes, but it's a certain things that he's really wants. That heave offering is something different than just an offering. We'll go into the free will offering in a minute. That was for the purpose of God. The heave offering is something that you voluntarily and willingly are going to offer and give it to God for him to use, whatever he wants to use it for. And he names specifically what he wants. That's not the only place. You can't give him what you think is the best thing. What did Moses say? Do not do these things that we have done before in the past. I want you to do this from now on. It's written in scriptures, written in the Torah. But remember, they didn't have a place. They didn't have land. They didn't have agriculture. They didn't have all the abundance. They were in the wilderness, right? Out there camping wherever God put them down for 40 years. 40 sites, 40 years. He goes on now in Ezekiel, Exodus, rather, 29th chapter. He says now, and thou shalt sanctify the breast of the wave offering and the shoulder of the heave offering you weigh before me. And verse 29, and he says, and it shall be Aaron's sons and a statute forever for the children of Israel of a heave offering, and it shall be a heave offering from the children of Israel, a sacred, sacrifice for a peace offering, even a heave offering unto Yahweh. Now, what does he want? Okay. You think he wants something that's unclean? Do you think he'll take something that is something he would not want? You know what it says. He knows what was. And when you give something to Aaron and his people, there's something for a reason. This heave offering was something different. That's a statute, by the way. It's a statute. Remember those statutes? Let's go in now. What's a free will offering? Okay, in that verse, he says down there, and thy free will offering. Sounds somewhat like, you know, heave offering, doesn't it, in verse 17. What's a free will offering? What's different from a free will offering when we have a heave offering, which is voluntarily done for certain cases and certain purposes for certain places for God and for the priesthood? Now, what's a free will offering? Where does it go? Now, why is it so important for us to understand this? Let me ask you a question. The things we have learned in the Torah, when the Messiah comes, people have asked, will we have offerings? Why not? Wouldn't you or people look at the Messiah and say, I want to give something to you? And he says, okay, the heave offering, this is what you'll give me for the heave offering, and you'll give it to it. For what reason? That I may dwell with you. That's the issue, right? I may dwell amongst you. I had to ask myself some questions. How come God doesn't just do it? Why is God involving mankind? To help build him a place for him to live. Can he build his own place? Why doesn't he? Why didn't he use his own hands? Ellie.
Because you love that which requires something of you. We love a baby okay. because he requires something. When we give to him, we come to love him more.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
He wants us to be a willing participant in what he's doing.
Good phrase. He wants to be us to be part of his life, his world. He wants to not just take over and rule you. He wants to share his life with you. And how does he share his life with you? By giving you something that you can give back to him, that you become echad with him. Am I out of place? Is that the purpose that God created Adam and Eve in the first place? To be echad? But, and we have, go ahead.
I guess arranged marriage would be good if there was free.
There's nothing biblical about arranged marriage, by the way.
I understand. I'm okay. saying that he could have just arranged it and said, you will be my bride, you will do what I say.
No. And as we look at how the Israelites had been tested out, 40 years in wilderness, do you think, quote, the church of God, who is the bride of Christ, though she's not yet married, must she be also tested in the wilderness? Yeah. She has to be tested. If she doesn't pass, she won't be the bride. And he wants her to be the bride. But the Father has to test the bride out. That's why each, every one of you, your future is not a great, wonderful kingdom of God. Your great future is you're going to be connected with, in every aspect, and greatly personally connected to, the Creator of heaven and earth. That's what we're here for. Is that too simple? I hope not. Now, a free will offering is something different. It's in Leviticus 22, verse 18. Just read a verse here. It says, speak unto Aaron and his sons, and to all the children of Israel, saying unto them, whatsoever he be who in the house of Israel, of the stranger or stranger in Israel, that will offer his, it says obligation there, that's not what the word in Hebrew means, his karban, coming up before, presenting himself before God, and his vows, that which is goodly things, that which is going to be blessed by, that God, what God said the vows are, and for his free will offering. Oh, it's a little bit different. Who's included in chapter, this verse 18? Who's included? The stranger. The stranger, the one that's not part of the house of Israel. Oh, and even Israelite can offer something of a free will offering. And of course, it must be, verse 19, listen to the offering, what it must be. Ye shall offer your own will, a male without blemish, of the beeves and of the sheep and of the goat. Oh, so I'm going to offer something different. It's not a heave offering. It's a free will offering. It's a little bit different. Who gets to eat all that food? The priest. You're giving something extra or special because what the priest has done for you and bringing your gifts to God before the altar. That's the difference between the two. All right, now. And of course, it says, once again, back in your place. Verse 20. And Elohim shall enlarge thy borders. What does that mean? Okay, we know borderline, right? Okay, along is the... know, that little river there, and that body of water, and that the bigger body, the dead water down here, you know, that big water over there, and that, oh, they can't go higher than Lebanon. And okay, what happens if there's too many of you? What does God do? Expand the borders. Somebody's going to have to move because you're getting too big. And he says now, when I have expanded your borders, and you find it's a long way away from the place where I put my name, what are you supposed to do? Oh, and he says they promised to give you and so on and so forth. And you'll be able to eat what you want to eat, and so on and so forth. And in verse 21, it says, if the place, okay, we went through that in the first part of Hebrews, I mean of Numbers. Wow. Let me get past this thing real quickly. The clean, and verse 22 means clean, and the unclean means the person that's clean or unclean. There's no stipulation of whether or not you be clean or unclean. But when you go before God, you must be clean. Go before you give him an offering, you must be of the state of being clean. But if you're in a different area, different location, no, you don't have to be. You could be clean or you could be unclean. You can still eat, and talking about eating the animals or the things. Now, if it's too far, you can actually do something, but you can sell the stuff, right? What are you supposed to do with it? Okay, so I sold it. Too far. I can't move my cow that far. So I'm selling it. Verse 26. Only thy holy things which you have, thy vows, that you will take. Oh, the law changed here? I've moved you far away from Jerusalem. And you can't travel that far, all that stuff. So, yes, you can take it and you could do what you need to do with it, but there's certain things of that offering that is holy. Don't do it. What are they? The vows? Oh, that's interesting. We just got to read about the vows, right? So now there's something different. But that's not all. Verse 27. Thou shalt offer a whole offering. You have a zivach offering. That's what you're supposed to have. That's what you're supposed to do when you come to the feast or go to the place where he's at. Verse 30, I find very fascinating. Interesting Hebrew phrase here. You remember the first part of this chapter? Moses said to destroy the places. Okay, and they did not destroy all the places efficiently at that point in time. In fact, they didn't destroy them all. And we'll go into that in a minute. We know that Solomon's son went to those places, all right, and did evil in the eyes of God. And it says here, take heed, always the warning, right, to thyself that thou be not, what is that word is? Snared? Okay. Any other translation? It's funny. The Hebrew phrase is a little bit different. I think it's kind of funny. See that you be not knocked down. You be struck and not down. That you be brought down not. By following that. Who's going to bring them down? The images? The Elohim that they serve? The foreign gods? Who's going to knock them down? God is going to knock them down. God's going to knock you down. God's going to strike you down. God is going to bring you down. Remember this action of God. Take heed, warning. Do not add or subtract. Do not change. Do not alter. Do not consider one law or one statute or one judgment of less important and so it's not important to institute. Because those Elohim out there, those worship places where they have their places of worship, it's going to destroy you. Basically, I have to take action. They had 40 years. How often did God take action to destroy many of them? Every single time. He even used snakes. He used scorpions. He used quails. He used water, or lack thereof. You know? So when we look at this thing, we think, well, yeah, the bad guy is going to come and get us. No, since God has you in mind, has called you to His world, brought you into His presence, He is going to do something. He's going to punish you, yes. Or He's going to discipline you, yes. And sometimes He's going to give you a trial. To see, not whether you could take it, to humble you and bring you down to real poverty and needing Him. Not financially, but needing Him internally and knowing that without Him, you don't have a chance in life. Of course, it says, do not do those things because they're a great abomination to me. Very last verse, 43. Now, what thing I ever say, whatever I command you, observe and do it. They're not there yet. They're not in there yet. Thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from. He started this whole conversation with them way back in Numbers, the 4th chapter. And in verse 2, you shall not add to the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish outright from it, neither that you may keep the commandments of Yahuwah, your Elohim, which I have commanded you. From the beginning of the lecture to this point, 12th chapter. So we're learning something new, aren't we? These are brand new people. They're going to go someplace for the first time in their life. And for the first time in their life, they're going to have a Passover. First thing they have is a Passover, right? First thing they had is a Passover when Joshua entered in. What did they have to do before they entered in? They had to get circumcised. And God explained specifically why. He tested them out by how much to roll back Egypt. Roll back it. It doesn't exist anymore. That generation, they didn't have Egypt as a thing they came out of because their parents were there. Their parents had a hard time walking away from it and wanted to keep on going back. This generation, no. It was over with. Now the future is to begin for them. A great and awesome, fantastic future is in for them. Did they have hard times going in? Did they have to fight wars? Yes. Were they tested? Yes. And instead of God killing them, who had to bring forth the first execution? Joshua. You remember that? Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? Joshua had to do the first execution in the promised land. Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? So Joshua, yeah, he understood the statutes, he understood the judgments, and he was going to carry them out. He did not know who did it or what did it, what happened. He had to rely upon God to give him the information, and he got it. And remember, Joshua was just devastated, he had to do it. He didn't like having to do it, but he killed him, or had him killed. So, and as we advance forward and we finish the book of Deuteronomy, we go through it, nothing has really changed in one aspect except that what they had been doing, they're not going to do that anymore. They're going to do something different. Oh, don't forget the Levites. Remember, the Levites had no promise, right? But they were given land. They're given certain cities. They're given physical land they could raise their crop on, they could raise their cattle on, they could do whatever they want to. They could do it, they could make it on their own. But there's something that the people had to do for the Levites. Don't forget them. Now, we haven't found out why yet. We're not there yet. We'll find out as time goes by. Why is it important for him to say this? That to help the ministry? Ministry may get wealthy. Then you take care of the ministry. Is that what it's all about? Why take care of the Levite? What were they going to inherit? Everything the Israelites were to give to the Levites, God says, it's mine, and I'm going to give it to you. You are now going to inherit what I am inheriting from the Israelites. Now what is mine is now yours. And we also know in Leviticus that the Levites had to take not just a tithe, they had to wind up find out what the best of everything is. They're the ones that had to be picky and make sure it wasn't the 10th one in line. It was the best one of the cattle, best one of the ox, best one of that section of 10. And the Levites, the Israelites just took the last one. Remember, it said if you say I'm a substitute, he gets both. The Levites? No. God had given orders for them. You give Aaron, the high priest, priestly family, the best of all of the offerings, including the heave offerings that are given. That's why Aaron got the breastplate. That was a heave offering. Remember the stones we read earlier? All the gorgeous stones? They were given as a heave offering. Don't believe me? Go back and read what in Leviticus. And who was it given to? Aaron. He got the most precious stones, the best of the best. Does that kind of give you a picture of what you would like to give your Messiah? Would you like to give your Messiah the best you have? Would you like to give the Messiah the most wonderful thing? Yeah, you would. And if you are to be the king of priesthood, there's one who is a high priest, and you are going to give him the best you can give him. That includes your life. I know I'm a little over. Sorry about that. Any comments?
I think it's so cool that you're talking about this today, because I've been really looking into the whole, into tithing and all the three tithes that they were required, the ma'aser, and you know, the different,
yeah, you're right.
For the priests, for the poor, and then one for the, what was the other one? There was one other one. You remember the other tithe, yeah. Anybody? There was only 2 years that they did
the Okay, the primary is given to God, and then they distributed from that right. To other people. The other part of the tithe goes to the Feast of Tabernacles. The Holy Days.
Right.
Now, that wasn't existed before. Okay? Now, what did they do with the tithe before? They gave it to the Levites, just like it was commanded. Now, you will not do this anymore. This is what you're going to do. Oh, as we get deeper into the sayings, but the 14th chapter, I believe it is. I'm not quite sure. You're going to take this, make sure your son's there. Yeah, make sure your wife's there, your son's there, your children are there, and your maidservant, your manservant. That's his job. He's going to say, oh, I don't want the job. No, I'm teasing him. I like to tease this guy.
My question was, how do we fulfill the first part, the Levite thing, since we don't really know who the Levites are?
Oh,
and, you know, right. Because I understand about giving to the poor and for the feast, but I'm just unclear about how to do that nowadays.
I'll tell you the honest truth. I'll be honest with you. I don't have an answer for that particular question because Levites have been replaced. Not technically replaced. They will be restored. They're just temporarily out of work. Okay, because why? There is no temple. They can't carry out those functions. Because that job was, the Levites' job was to be the ones that helped the priest. Not the other way around. All right? Until the priesthood comes on, until someone's a priest who is a high priest, then the Levites would have to serve them. That's what God said in the book of Numbers. I give the Levites to the priest as a gift. And the Levites, as only certain groups of Levites could do certain things, but not all of them. You know what I'm saying? We don't know those things yet, to tell you the honest truth.
The priesthood, we are the priesthood.
Right now, yes.
So can we just give to the believer, you know,
Your choice. I'm not going to tell you yes or no. Okay, your choice. Okay. I never tell people what to do. I never tell people what to do. I will not tell you it's right or wrong, but blessed be God who will guide you and direct you. Always. Whatever I say has no value. What my opinion is of no value. What I think through the tithe is worthless. You've got to go to the Word of God. If you don't know, get on your knees and ask Him to guide you. Simple as that. Not that hard to do, is it? But I'll tell you this much. I am not a Levite. And I'm not a priest. So don't give your tithes to me. You're breaking the law. I don't know about Jeff or Daniel, but you know, don't do it to me.